Okay, we'll start with a very familiar Rashi, and we will base everything to explain that Rashi properly, I think. Okay. It says that Noach ish tzadik, Noach was a tzadik, tomim hoya bedorosav, he was perfect in his generation. So Rashi brings down, yesh mi rabosenu shedorshim l'shevach, some learn that which it qualifies that he was perfect in his generation is to the praise of Noah. That if in his generation of wicked people he could be so righteous, he surely would have been more righteous if he had been in a generation of tzaddikim. The yesh darshim l'gnai, Rashi says, and some learn it as a critique of Noah, criticism. That Noah was only considered righteous, perfectly righteous in his generation compared to the wicked people around him. But had he lived in the generation of Avram, he wouldn't have been considered anything. There's two problems. First of all, there are rules how to learn things out of the Torah. We know that there's 13 rules of how to learn halachic things, and there are 32 rules how to learn agada, Medrash. One of the rules is that whenever the Torah tells us something that we could elaborate on concerning a tzaddik, it was meant to be elaborated for the good. Whenever the Torah tells us something about wicked people that can be elaborated on, it's meant to be elaborated for the bad. That's a rule. So how could there be people who darshan a critique and criticism of Noach when you could learn it positive? The rule is that if there's something to learn and elaborate and it concerns a tzaddik, it's obvious it has to be for the good, not for the bad. So why would there be people who learn about Noach something negative instead of the positive? Second problem. That which it says bedorosav is not going on the word tzaddik. It doesn't say tzaddik bedorosav. It says tamim bedorosav. Tzaddik, tamim. Tzaddik is righteous. Tamim is perfect. We'll see in one second what that perfection referred to, but whatever it was perfect. Tamim means perfect. Perfection is not a relative term. Either you're perfect, you're not perfect. Right? You can't be partially perfect because you're not perfect. Then you're totally not perfect. So perfection is an absolute. How could you be perfect compared to these and not perfect compared to that? Either you're perfect or you're not perfect. You could be more righteous, less righteous, but you can't be more perfect or less perfect, because if you're less perfect, you're not perfect at all. Therefore, the way I understand this Rashi is the following. Rashi's telling us, everybody agrees that Noah, had he been in any other generation of righteous people, would have been even more righteous, to his praise. The negative is only compared to Avraham Avinu. Noach's perfection was on one level, and the compared to the perfection that Avraham Avinu brought to the world, Noach's perfection was nothing. You understand why nothing? Because it's either all or nothing when it comes to perfection. If you're not perfect, then you're not perfect. Then you're nothing. Perfection-wise. In other words, Avraham Avinu created a new standard for perfection where Noah's standard of perfection, which he was perfect in, would have been nothing compared to Avraham Avinu. Not only that, but it's more exacting. Because the truth is, Noah did live in the generation of Avraham. Noah didn't die until Avram was, I don't know exactly how old, but in his 80s. So why does Rashi say if he would have been in the generation of Avram? But Rashi doesn't say the generation of Avram, but the generation of Avraham. He wasn't called Avram till he was 99 years old, and when he had Bris Milah. Noah died before that. Compared to Avram, that was still the same bar, the same kind of perfection. Noah would have been also perfect and more righteous. But when Avraham Avinu became 99, had his name changed, it became a different world, a different bar of perfection. And Noah's level of perfection compared to Avram's level of perfection was nothing, because it wasn't perfect anymore. So now we have to understand what that means. What is this perfection of Avram Avinu and the perfection of Noach, and that Noach compared to Avram therefore would have been imperfect, not perfect at all in the standards of Avram Avinu. And I'm going to show you some very interesting parallels between Noach and Avram. And therefore, the second question is also answered. Or the first question. How could the rabbis darshan something negative about Noach when the rule is you always look for something positive about tzaddikim? Because it's not coming to tell us something negative about Noach. It's coming to tell us something positive about Avram Avinu. So we're darshaning, using Noach as a means to praise Avram Avinu. And since for us Avram Avinu is more significant than Noach, so it's kedai to say something negative about Noach in order to bring out the positive of Avram Avinu. But the purpose is not to speak negative about Noach, it's to praise Avram Avinu and to compare him to Noach and show us how superior he was in his perfection. Okay. Now what does that mean? It says by Avram Avinu, okay, before he had Bris Milah, and when his name was changed, God said the following to him: "Vayehi Avram ben tishim shana v'teisha shanim, vayera Hashem el Avram." God appeared to Avram with the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. It wasn't a full prophecy, but he appeared to him in a lower prophecy, but using the name Yud Kei Vav Kei, not Elohim, Hashem. "Vayomre lov ani Kel Shakai." I am Kel Shakai, the power that has enough within me to provide for the entire world. Hisalech lefonai v'heyei samim. Walk before me and be perfect. So here, it's telling Avram Avinu that his perfection is going to come from walking before Hashem, in front of Hashem. And you, that will bring you to perfection. So Avram Avinu's perfection is referred to as his salech lefanai, walk before me. On the other hand, by Noach it says, es ho Elohim his salech Noach. Es meaning im. Noach walked with God, not in front of him, with him. Noach's perfection was with God. Avram's perfection was in front of God. Walk before me. We'll see in 1 second what that means. Noach needed constant help. He had to walk together with God to be perfect. And Avram Avinu was able to walk before God. He didn't need constant help. He walked before God. Now what does all this mean? So the Daz Akedah Balei Tosa says that at that point Avram Avinu reached a new level of perfection that didn't exist before. Before this, Avram Avinu was not a ruler over all his 248 organs. He didn't rule completely over his eyes or his ears or his sexual aspect of him. But now God made him a complete ruler over all of his organs, eyes, ears, and what's it called, sexual inyanim with Bris Milah. And that's why he was Avram before, missing a hay, and God added an extra hay, which now is 248. Avraham is 248. Before he was only over 243. Now he had the extra 5. Meaning the following. There's 2 levels of perfection. One is where a person is able to control his, he has a Yetzer Hara, and he's able to control it. Okay? And not go after it. Okay? Then there's another level where a person doesn't have a Yetzer Hara at all, where his entire desire is only to do good. It's not that he desires to do bad, but he controls himself. His entire desire is only for good. That second one is called serving God with both your Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov. Not only do you control and suppress your Yetzer Hara, you channel it and use it and sublimate it. Now the eyes, ears, and sexual things, right? You see whatever you see. You can't control what you see, but you can what's it called, control not going after what you see. Lo sasuru achri levavchem v'achrei neichem. You hear what you hear. You can't really be, you can't distinguish and choose what you're going to hear. But you can control not to go after the things that are negative. Okay? The same thing with sexual things. You have desire for sexual things and you control it. On the higher level, the Rebbeinu Shlomo lets Avraham Avinu only see the good things. You don't see the other one. You don't hear the other thing. Your entire desire, sexually, whatever, is only for good. So you're in total control. You're not suppressing an evil desire. You're taking the evil desire and turning it into good. Now, and the Sfarno says that how did that work? Sfarno says the following. I'll read you his whole thing. He says like this: Shehizgala elo b'mara velo b'nevua. He appeared to him in a vision, not a full prophecy, but he appeared to him in this vision with the name of God Yudkei Vavkei. Shehu Kael Shakai, and he said to him that he is the power, Kael Shakai, that is sufficient. He has sufficient power to take care of everything in this world. Sheyeshlo Dai Koach Lifo Bebria Velo Tzorich Poel Acher. I don't need any help. I have enough power to take care of the whole creation. And the Hisalech Lefanai, and you walk before me. Kimistakel Bi, walk before me and look back and observe me. Right? Lodash Durachai, know my ways. In other words, emulate my character traits. Walk before me, look back, and observe my character traits. Kifiha Efshar Etzlecha, as is possible, as is humanly possible. As it says, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Tamid, I have God before me always. So you're walking in front of me, looking back, and observing me constantly. You have me and my ways of acting before you always. The Haye Tomim, then you'll be perfect. Uknei Hashlemus Efshori Lemino Enoshi, you will then acquire that kind of perfection that is possible for human beings. Haskel V'Yodolsi, what is that perfection? Knowing me, intelligently knowing God. B'Yedias Drachai, right? Uvimedos Cholai, by knowing my ways, my character traits, and emulating them. Kifi ha'efshir, as is possible, as is humanly possible. Ki omnom pu'ulas kol nimsa Torah al tzuroso. Because how what a person does, or what something does, represents what it is. Hodieni noaz drachecha. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says. I want to know you. How do I know you? By knowing your ways. By knowing what you do and how you function, I know who you are. Vizehu hashlemus ha'achru lemin, and that is the ultimate perfection, the greatest, most intense perfection of human beings. Hamechuvin meisakel yisbar b'bri, and this is what God intended when He created man. Nasa adam b'tzalmenu kidmuseinu, they should be like God. How do you be like God? By emulating His character traits. So basically, what God is telling Avraham Avinu, I'm creating a new kind of perfection. Noah's perfection was within nature. He walked with God. Okay? Meaning that the purpose of Goyim, okay, before Avraham Avinu, before the Jewish people got their roots, the purpose of the non-Jewish world was to live in the world and to develop the world, perfect the world, and create the infrastructure for Kiddusha and holiness to be infused into the world. But they weren't supposed to infuse it with holiness. They were supposed to create the infrastructure that then would be infused with holiness. And therefore, they were supposed to create an infrastructure that was not corrupted, that was righteous, okay? And everything was in the name Elohim. Hashem is God, the creator above nature. And Elohim is God in nature. In fact, the name Elohim has the same numerical value as Hateva, nature. Hello, and that's why it's plural. One of the reasons. Because God in nature is all the powers that of nature are represented by God being the source of all those powers. So it's plural. God is the master of all the powers of nature. But it's God manifested in nature. And therefore, the purpose of man is to create an infrastructure, not to destroy the world, not to corrupt the world, but to develop the world. And therefore, what's it called? It says that Noah was a tzaddik b'maisav. He was righteous in his deeds. The tamim and the perfection was in the fact that he didn't have any bad character traits. That's what Rabbeinu Bachya says. But not that he emulated God. He just didn't have any bad character traits that would corrupt or destroy the world. There's two levels of character traits. There's a level of an ein derech eretz ein Torah. If you don't have the simple, basic character traits that enable people to get along with each other, and that there should be able to be a functioning society, there can't be a Torah. There can't be a Torah unless there's a society. Torah can only exist within a functioning society. So the first level is to have the basic character traits where people can coexist, where people don't destroy each other and step on each other's toes, but they're able to coexist and create a structure for then the Torah to exist. Torah can only exist within a society. If there is no society, there's no Torah. So first you need the basic character traits of creating a society. But in ein Torah, ein derech eretz. Once you have the Torah and the society, then you can perfect the world, right, to a higher level of derech eretz where you emulate God. Not just midos of being able to create a functioning society, but midos that are holy, that are godly. That's the higher refinement of character. Not just because you need to have midos tovos, otherwise people can't get along. But even had nothing to do with people getting along. The refinement of a person, nothing to do with how it affects other people. That you're a godly person. That you act in a godly way. That's the higher level. Noah's level of midos was that he didn't have any bad midos, so he could create a society. He functioned within nature. And it says that man was created la'amol, to bring out potential. Amol means to toil. Man was created to toil. Toil means you take something from its potential state and you actualize it. That's called toil. Work. Work is actualizing potential. And the Gemara says there's three ways of doing that. One way is through work, through physical work. Right? That's one way of bringing the world, actualizing potential. The other way is through conversation and communication. Okay, that's how you build society. You build it physically, materially, and you also function through communication, with working together to bring the world and create society. And the last way is through Torah. Torah is the ultimate perfection of infusing the world with holiness. But in order to create the infrastructure of the world, you need physical labor and material refinement and development of the world, and society, which is created through communication, sicha. Okay. The Goyim have the first two. They develop the world by creating the infrastructure materially and socially. They create the social structure of the world, which then the Jewish people can infuse with Torah. Because once you have a society, you have a world, you can infuse it with Torah. So therefore, the Goyim, and that's why when the Goyim didn't fulfill that, they used their ability to perfect and develop the world for idolatry. Not to develop God's world, but to rebel against God. That was by Dor HaFloga, by when they built the Tower of Babel. And they used their communication skills to create a society that rebelled against God. God took away their communication skills and changed their languages and destroyed their handiwork. But the goal is to create that infrastructure. And therefore, the Goyim have seven mitzvahs. Seven is the number of material, natural perfection. 7 days of creation is the physical world. Okay? And therefore, the Goyim were given a bris. Which bris was Noach given? Bris HaKeshes, the rainbow. The rainbow is a bris of Kiyum HaOlam, that the world will continue to exist and not be destroyed. So Noach was given a covenant that the world will be able to exist and not be destroyed. That was the covenant of Noah, and it was given for seven mitzvahs within nature. Goyim are supposed to function within nature and reach their perfection within nature, and build the world, create the infrastructure, and society, all within nature. That's Esho Elohim. Noah walks with God, with Elohim, with God in nature. Okay. And he needs constant support because he has within nature all these evil inclinations and desires, and he has to suppress them, overcome them, or whatever. That is Noah and his children. On the other hand, Avraham Avinu and his children, meaning the Jewish people, right, have a different thing. We start with the number 8, Bris Milah. We don't have the bris of the Keshes. The bris of the Keshes is the bris of the existence of the physical world. It won't be destroyed. Bris Milah is a bris, a covenant with each individual person that God's name devolves on the physical body of a person, and the person can now infuse that with holiness. That's Bris Milah, and it's number 8. It's beyond nature. It's not within the 7 days of creation. It's the 8th. Which is beyond nature. And those are the different, the higher level of Midos. The first level of Midos is, don't corrupt and destroy the world, get along with people, be a mensch. And the higher level of Midos, which comes after Torah, is be godly. Don't just be a mensch, be godly. And there, the Midos are not necessarily dependent on how it affects other people. Right? The first level of Midos is, if you don't have good Midos, if you have bad character, you're not going to be able to have a functioning society. People are going to not be able to live together. The second one has nothing to do with how people live together. Even if you're isolated in a room by yourself and nobody sees, hears, or is affected, you have to be godly. You have to act in a godly way. Not just you have to get along with people. You have to be able to become godly. That's the higher level of Midos. That's the perfection of Avraham Avinu. And that's walking before God and observing God's Midos and developing and emulating those Midos. The first is a lower level where you just develop those kinds of character traits where you can get along with other people and not harm them and not corrupt the world. Okay, that's why the Goyim were given a system that is based on seven mitzvos within nature. The number 7, like we said, is the number of nature, 7 days of creation. Whereas we were given 10 commandments. And we'll see in 1 second the differences between them. 10 is a number of Kedusha. 10, the number 10 represents, one is the ultimate unity of God. Once God created many things, that unity doesn't come back until the number 10. 10 takes all the units and makes them into one unit of 10. That's how you write it in Arabic numerals. One unit of 10, zero ones. It's a decimal system. In Hebrew, asara is a unit. You don't have a new number after that. You build on it. Achadisrei, shtemesrei, 1 plus 10. The 10 becomes a unit. So God's unity is, we go back to God's unity, which is holiness, by putting everything together and unifying it under God. That's a number 10. So we have 10 commandments. They have 7 mitzvahs. They have a system within nature. We have a system that infuses nature with holiness. That's the number 10. That's the Aseres HaDibros. If you look at it, you'll see the differences. Some of them are the same, but not the same. For instance, Goyim are not allowed to serve idolatry. But we have believing in God, Anokhi Hashem Elokecha, knowing God, and not serving idolatry. It's enough for a goy not to be idolatrous. But there's no mitzvah for him to know God. He just can't serve idolatry. There's no positive commands, only a negative one. So, by default, he has to believe in God. He doesn't have to know him. It says that Avraham Avinu knew God at 3, but he didn't really recognize him until he was 40. Recognizing God means knowing his attributes and emulating them. That's called knowing God, recognizing God. A goy has to know there's a God. He doesn't have to know God. He doesn't have to recognize him. He doesn't have to perfect his midos to the point where he's godly, where he's holy. He just has to be able to live within the physical world, not corrupt it, not destroy it, create the infrastructure. That's what he's required to do. It's the Jew that goes beyond the world and introduces holiness into that infrastructure. So therefore, that's the first thing. Second thing is, a goy is what's it called, commanded not to be immoral. Gilui Arayos. But it's only the ultimate immorality that affects society. Either because it's utterly corrupt, a goy can't live with his mother or his sister, and he can't take somebody else's wife. All of that corrupts society. It hurts other people. It's either totally corruptible, right? People living with their mother or their sister, or it destroys society because you can't go around living with other people's wives. But we have the mitzvah of losinath, which includes every kind of modesty and immodesty that we have to be holy. It includes a lot more than just not living with your mother or your sister or not taking somebody else's wife. It includes every level from the most subtle immodesty to the most intense. They are not allowed to murder, basically, because murder destroys the world, right? You can't have a society if people are murdering each other. But we have losirtzach. Losirtzach includes even embarrassing people and doing things that don't affect people. Not being involved in having children or whatever is also considered murder. So we have the subtleties, not only the destruction of the world that comes from murder, but the destruction of holiness that comes from murder. Destroying God's image in the world. They're not allowed to curse God. We're not allowed to take God's name in vain. Different thing. One is the negative, destructive. The other one is we have to connect ourselves to God's name and elevate it and sanctify, not take it in vain. It's not just a negative, destructive. It's a positive beyond nature of connecting into God, but not taking his name in vain. Then they have a social system, a legal system that's basically based on making sure the world can exist. They have to create laws and courts and punishment and reward or whatever in order that you can have a functioning society, that there's not anarchy. But we have losan de bereacha, a checker, not to even give false testimony, right, where the results will be okay. You're not hurting anybody, but it's not true. In other words, what's prohibited not giving false testimony is, I know for sure that this person murdered so-and-so. But I only heard it from hearsay. I heard it from somebody else who's very reliable. And that person now died and he can't come and testify. So I make it as if I saw it. So I'm not hurting anybody, right? But it's a lie. We're not only there to see to it that society can exist. We're there to see that there's truth. It's a higher level. They're not allowed to steal. But we have losignov. Losignov includes from the most intense kind of stealing where you steal a human being, kidnapping. And you're really not stealing him because he's still there, but you're monopolizing his independence, taking away his independence. That's a much higher level. Stealing, what the goyim have, is not to destroy and corrupt the world. People who steal from each other, you can't have a society. But if I could steal from somebody and not affect society, this person is still functioning, so it's functioning for me. It's not destroying society by kidnapping, right? This person is still a productive member of society, just not independent. Or losachmod is also included, which doesn't fit for them. I can't even be jealous of what you have. I'm not hurting anybody. It's all in my heart, right? But there's not holiness. So it's not only how it affects other people. Even being jealous of you and not affecting you at all. You don't even know about it. I'm not allowed to do that either. I have to be holy, not just I have to not destroy society. And and therefore, what's it called? By Bnei Noach, it says, Yom V'layla, when God made this covenant, he said, Lo Yishbosu. They never rest. They don't have a Shabbos. They have to work 7 days a week. It's a goy who takes a rest or takes a day off with malacha and doesn't, keeps a Shabbos, is not doing the proper thing. Goyim have to work 7 days a week. Doesn't mean that they have to go to work, but means that they don't keep a Shabbos. They don't stop creating. Even on their day of rest, they still turn on lights and whatever, right? They don't have the concept of ceasing from, but we have Shabbos, right? We were given Shabbos. Zohar Shema Shabbos, it's part of the Ten Commandments. Shabbos is Mein Olam Haba, it's beyond this world. And they don't have the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, honoring a parent. They may have the idea of honoring them as Hakaras HaTov, to be grateful, but fear of a parent, respect of a parent, they don't have. Why? What do they have? Pru Urvu. They were told, worry about the future. Worry about populating the world. Right? The future. We're worried also about the past. Respecting tradition. Because when it comes to accumulated knowledge, science, technology, every generation improves on the generation before. It's a matter of accumulated knowledge. But when it comes to holiness, it's revealed knowledge. And every generation goes down, because it gets farther away from the source. So therefore you have to respect the past. Because if you don't, you don't respect the tradition. So we live on tradition, Kibud Av V'Em. They live on accumulating knowledge in the future, Pru Urvu, not stopping to work. So Shabbos and honoring a parent are the hallmarks of Kedusha. That's why when the Torah introduces Kedoshim Tiyu, you should be holy, it says right after that, respect your parents and keep Shabbos. Parents and Shabbos are the hallmarks of holiness. With this you can understand also why the Goyim, in part of their seven mitzvahs, is something that doesn't appear in the Ten Commandments. And that is Eiver Min HaChai. They're not allowed to eat meat torn from a live animal. We're not allowed to either. But it's an incidental mitzvah. It's not part of the Ten Commandments. Because Goyim, it's part of their very the foundation of their system, not to be an animal. Don't eat animals where you're eating the lifeblood of the animal. You're taking the animal when it's alive, it has much more of an impression. Don't become an animal. Don't become an animal is a separate thing. We're supposed to be godly. It's a separate thing. So we have all these mitzvahs of kashrus or whatever to ensure that we can still be godly, not just not be an animal. But it's intrinsic to their system not to be an animal. With that you can understand. So the system of the Goyim, even though they're similar to us, stealing, murder, whatever, we also have those things in the Ten Commandments. But for us, it's not just because these things destroy society. They affect other people. It's because we have to keep these things in a way that makes us more godly, even if it doesn't destroy society and doesn't affect anybody else. You can therefore understand when God offered the Torah to the Goyim and they asked what's in it, and God said, it says you can't steal, you can't murder, and they said, well, we can't accept that because we have a problem, because we live by the sword, or right? They had to keep it anyway. They have to keep not stealing and not murdering. But it's a different world. Their idea of not stealing and not murdering is just not to destroy society. So you could go to war, and as long as it's wartime, that's not destroy society. That's the way the world is. People go to war, and you're allowed to kill them. But if you're in the Jewish system, you can't just go to war anytime. You need a Sanhedrin and Urim V'Tumim and a Melech, and you have to, only wars that are okay can you go to. So there, they're going to be stymied. So we're willing to accept the Torah, we're willing to accept mitzvahs that the only purpose of this is to preserve society, but it leaves a lot of leeway of doing these things in a way that doesn't harm the society. But we don't want a Torah where we have to do these things because we have to be godly. That much not. Different system. Even though it's the same prohibition. Different system. And with that you can understand also, the Sfarno says that Noah was unsuccessful in influencing his generation and saving it, whereas Avraham Avinu was successful. Because Noach only taught them about the evils of destroying society. He didn't teach them to know God and to walk in His ways. Because when you do tshuva, just not to destroy society, you don't get any heavenly help for that. That's within nature and whatever. So you don't get any heavenly help. But when you do tshuva, because you want to purify yourself, right? So then God helps you purify yourself. Then you're doing tshuva with God. So God will help you, right? So if, and then you become a Talmud Chacham, meaning that you get the right kinds of midos that emulate God. That kind of tshuva, right, is you get divine help. And they would have been successful. That's how Avraham Avinu converted people and influenced them, by teaching them to emulate God. Noach just taught them the evils that they were doing in destroying society. And with that, it's a very natural kind of tshuva, but you don't get any godly help, so he wasn't successful. And that's why we say, Hashiveinu Avinu Sorasecha, bring us back to the Torah, and then V'hachazireinu B'seshuva Shleima. Then you can do tshuva. First you have to have Torah, you have to have that higher level of Kedusha, then you can do tshuva, because then you'll have divine help for it too. Okay, and that's ultimately the partnership between the Jewish people and the nations of the world. They're supposed to create the infrastructure of society, not corrupt it, not destroy it, develop it, and then we live within that society, within that world, and in that infrastructure, and infuse it with holiness. That's why the Gemara says that in the future the Goyim are going to come and want reward for what's it called, for building markets and bathhouses, and they claim that he did it for the sake of the Jewish people. It's clear that if they would have done it with that intention, they would get rewarded. That's their job. Their job is to create the infrastructure in order the Jewish people should infuse the world with holiness. That we should take the world towards God, but first has to be a world. They're there to create the world, to maintain the world, to develop the world, physically, materially. Okay. And that's why it says by the Goyim in the future, Oz Ekra El Amim Sofa Barura, I'll give the nations a clear language to call God's name and to serve Him shoulder to shoulder. What's the Goyim's purpose? Society. Communication. Now God broke up that communication because Goyim only could get together to serve idolatry and to rebel against God. But in the future, God's going to give them again a clear language where they can have a communications and build a society. And serve God shoulder to shoulder means physically with labor. Build the world. Right? Develop the infrastructure of the world. By Yidden it says, Lo Yero, Lo Yashchisu B'chol Har Kodshi in Eretz Israel, by Jews. Har Kodshi, right? Umala Ha'aretz Deyas Hashem, the world will be filled with the knowledge of God. Like the waters fill the sea. What does that mean? The waters represent holiness, purity. The sea is an empty crater. It's a physical thing, but it's meaningless unless you fill it with that water. So the world, the physical world, will be filled with holiness, just like the crater of the sea. It's an empty vacuum. But if you fill it with the water, it gives it purpose. It becomes a sea. So too the world is an empty vacuum. It's a lot of material things. But if you fill it with holiness, it serves a purpose. So we will be in Eretz Yisrael filling the world with holiness, and they'll be creating the crater in the world. Now when Goyim, however, don't do their purpose and they corrupt the world and destroy the world, God brings that same water, but instead of filling the crater, it destroys the world. That's the flood. It takes everything. You can't have the material world where it represents corruption, destruction, and rebellion against God. So then it has to be dissolved by the pure waters, and that's a flood. And that's why it says, when God was giving the Torah to the Jewish people, the Goyim thought that he's bringing another flood, a flood of water, a flood of fire. And Bilaam said, no, he's giving the Torah. But I think that that's exactly the point. There's a destructive flood of water and fire that destroys matter and a material world that is in opposition to God. But there's another kind of flood. The flood that fills the world with water, doesn't destroy it, but fills the crater of the world and makes it like a sea. That's the knowledge of God, and that's Torah. So God was bringing a flood, but not the destructive kind of flood of fire and water, but the constructive kind of flood, where the world is illuminated with the fire of Torah and brought purified with the waters of Torah, but not in the way that destroys it, in the way that fills up the emptiness of the world and gives it purpose. So it is, giving the Torah is a flood, but it's a different kind of flood. It's a a positive, constructive flood, not a destructive flood. So that's the lesson, I think, of the parsha, to know what the role of the goyim is in this world, to know what our role is, to know that their perfection is one level and our perfection is a different level. And that's how the Torah compared Noah to Avraham.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure if I missed how does what you said, Rabbi said, you're not suppressing the evil desire but using it for good. You understand how?
Right. There's two levels. One is where I have the desire to do evil, but I suppress it. But it's there. The desire for evil, that's within nature. There's another one where I go beyond nature, I take that evil desire and I totally transform it into something good. I don't have any desire for evil. I'm only going to use that desire for the good. I don't have to suppress it. My desire is only for the good. Not that I have a desire for the bad, but I have to suppress it. I don't desire bad. My entire functioning is all geared for the good. I don't have any desire to do bad. I only have desire to do good. And I channel all my desires towards good. The lower level is I have desires to do bad, but I'll suppress it. I won't do it.
So you're just using the desire itself as the good.
Right, right. In other words, a person can have a desire to eat things that are destructive or whatever, but he holds himself back. Right? I'll only eat kosher. Or I don't have any desire for those things. They don't interest me. My entire appetite is only to eat for mitzvahs and kedusha or whatever. I don't have to suppress it at all. Right? There's no suppression. My desire to eat is a desire to fulfill God's will. But if I have a desire to eat, I would love to eat pig, but I'll hold myself back. That's a different level. Okay.